This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Welcome to the Mom Room Podcast. My name is Renee Rina, and I am definitely the mom friend you have always wanted. This episode is brought to you by GrowCo Postnatal Rehab. GrowCo was founded in 2018 by chiropractor Dr. Ali Kane when she was 32 weeks pregnant with her first baby. She wanted to create a rehab program that supported women through the physical, mental, and emotional challenges of motherhood. The GrowCo methodology is aimed at preventing, reducing, and resolving symptoms women have been made to think are an inevitable consequence of childbirth. Between Monday, November 23rd and Monday, November 30th, you have the chance to get 50% off your one-time payment to become a GrowCo member. Classes stream 24/7, so you're able to do them whenever it works best for you. There's also a weekly live class with a GrowCo doctor and also a monthly masterclass. The goals of GrowCo are to be accessible to women, be supportive, but also provide them with a high-quality rehab program. Everything is focused on your core and your pelvic floor, which you guys know that I love. Now that we are settled into our new home, I am signed up for GrowCo and I am starting next week. So if you guys want to start this program with me, join, and I will probably do some Instagram lives or some IGTVs just to share with everyone my thoughts and struggles or things that I like about the program. So again, between Monday, November 23rd and Monday, November 30th, you will get 50% off this program, and it is important to note that it is a one-time payment, so you have access to all this goodness for a lifetime. Your pelvic floor will thank you. To find out more details, please go to the episode notes, and I will have all the links for you guys in there. Okay, so today I am speaking with Jenna Overbaugh. She is a licensed therapist in Wisconsin who has been working with individuals, families, and children since 2008. She has a blog, a podcast called All the Hard Things, and a beautiful website with lots of free resources. She reached out to me about doing an episode on anxiety and OCD in pregnancy and motherhood, and I was so happy when I read her outline because of the things she wanted to talk about. So here we are. So first, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your own experience with anxiety and OCD?
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me. I think especially now with the pandemic and moms being in such a vulnerable position with maybe having to stay home more or having to manage the whole like school daycare scenario more, it's so important that we reach moms and dads too as much as possible. So thank you for allowing me this opportunity. And I think what you do is great too, just offering solidarity to moms and all of that stuff. So growing up, I was always, I think, an anxious kid. I remember just even before school, I would get really nervous. I would get anxious and have like a stomach ache. But I was always that kid too, who was like the first person to introduce themselves at school, or those awkward icebreakers the first day of school. Like I would be the first one to do it because I loved doing hard things and I loved challenging myself. And I knew that as I continued to not listen to that anxious voice, it would get easier. And then in college, I actually, in one of my psych courses, I learned that that was an actual treatment kind of for anxiety and OCD. And so what that is it's called exposure and response prevention, ERP. And once I learned that, I was like, oh my gosh, like this is me. I believe in this so much and I love it. And so from that point on, I really made OCD and anxiety my focus. And I worked all over. Like I had dream jobs. I worked at Johns Hopkins. I am now in one of the most world-renowned facilities to help people with the most debilitating OCD and anxiety in the world. And so when I got pregnant with my kiddo, he was born February of 2018 on Valentine's Day. I knew all about postpartum anxiety. I knew all about postpartum OCD. And I was actually, I think, fairly naive going into it. I thought that I was almost immune to these issues because I knew so much and because, you know, I was educated in the area, I knew what I should do and what I shouldn't do in order to kind of make those problems not crisis problems. So when I had my child, I felt that I just wasn't instantly bonded to him like I expected to be. The first couple of weeks weren't bad, but as he got a little bit older, I started to notice I was having just awful, awful intrusive thoughts about a couple of things. A couple of ways that this like manifested for me was I was terrified that I was going to leave him somewhere. So I remember I would be driving with him in the back seat and I could see the car seat in the back seat. I could hear him like gooing and cut and like, you know, laughing or whatever. And I was like, but what if that's not real? Like, what if I'm not clear on what I'm seeing right now? What if I can't hear him? I would legitimately pull over and have to like touch him to make sure that he was in the car seat. And then that just made me feel so much worse because I was like, I know that I shouldn't have done that. Like, I should know better than to have done that. What's going on with me? Like, I just felt almost worse because I had all this information because I was not following that. I almost felt like then I'm a fraud. Like, I'm a total imposter on top of being anxious. And so that I remember thinking so vividly, like, if this is how badly I'm struggling with anxiety and OCD, and I know all of this stuff, like I have the context for it, I can't let other women struggle like this. Like, I have to do something. And so I kind of pivoted. Yeah.
I was going to say that's how I felt because I made the choice. I take citalopram every day for anxiety. And even though it's a low dose, it's one of those things where when you get pregnant, they're kind of like, well, you have to weigh your like pros and cons and decide if you want to stay on it. So for me, I decided to stay on it and my pregnancy was awesome. I didn't have any issues, but then the first couple weeks after Milo was born, I had like raging anxiety that would like present mostly when the sun started to go down. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I'm taking medication and this is how I feel. So I can just imagine, like you said, how other people must feel. Like, so yeah, same thing. And with me as well, like I knew what to look for. I knew kind of what to expect. And it's still like you can't control it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what's worse. It's all worse, right? Like I would never wish this on anybody. Now that I'm out of the cloud and I feel it even stronger now, but even when I was in the thick of it, I was like, oh my gosh, I would not wish this on my worst enemy. No mom should have to go through this. And the statistics, I want moms to know, like, you can easily look up the statistics for perinatal OCD and anxiety, meaning like when you're pregnant, what percentage of the population struggle with it. I think it's like 1 or 2%. And then when you have the baby, I think it goes up to like 2 or 3% actually have OCD, and 10% I think actually have like generalized anxiety. But I think that's completely underreported. So I think, one, those are all based off of actual diagnoses, right? So in order to get a diagnosis, you have to present for help. How many women aren't able to or don't feel like they need to just yet, right? And so I think that automatically makes the numbers jump up. And then two, we can think of these things on a spectrum. It's not either you have anxiety or you don't, or you have OCD or you don't, especially as a mom. Things are just so dang complicated. So we got to think about things as existing on a spectrum. And I guess moral of the story is a lot of people struggle, and I don't think that it's just 2 or 3%. Like, there's no way.
Yeah. This episode is brought to you by Magic Spoon. You guys know I have been very intentional with what we've been eating lately. I'm looking at protein, I'm looking at sugar content, and avoiding things like artificial ingredients or colorings. Milo used to always want pancakes or waffles in the mornings, and now he is getting into cereal, and I'm so excited because Magic Spoon is the perfect option. Their variety pack has 4 flavors: cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. They have 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 to 5 grams of carbs per serving. They're made with wholesome ingredients, no artificial flavors or dyes, and I'm just so happy that he's getting a good amount of protein before he goes off to school. And it's a great snack for me and my husband too, because 13 to 14 grams of protein in the cereal, now you add a high protein milk, you're set. That is such a high protein snack or meal. I should also mention that it is gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. So go to magicspoon.com/momroom to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code MOMROOM at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. So try a delicious bowl of Magic Spoon cereal today at magicspoon.com/momroom and use the code MOMROOM to save $5. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. And it's time to give a shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode of the Mom Room and providing me with samples. Thank you, Claritin. Guys, I am starting to come to terms with the fact that I do suffer from allergies. I used to think, oh, I just have really bad sinuses. No, you have allergies. So let's talk a little bit about my symptoms. I wake up with not a stuffed nose, but like I have to blow my nose constantly. So it's like it's producing mucus and I have to keep blowing my nose. It's all itchy. The palate, like the roof of my mouth is itchy in the mornings and I'm trying to like scratch it with my tongue. It's really irritating. And the insides of my ears get itchy. It's one thing to have those symptoms when I'm just hanging out at home. But for example, yesterday I was at book club and my nose kept getting so tingly and itchy and I kept having to go to the bathroom to blow my nose. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. It's designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. So if you're ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter or ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. And it's one of those things too, like when it comes to mental health, it's like not a lot of people receive an actual diagnosis, but it doesn't mean that you're not struggling. And yeah, it's the same, like I was in eating disorders for so long, like in my research, and a lot of people do not fit into an eating disorder diagnosis, but that doesn't mean they don't have problems. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing, right? Like I probably wouldn't have been diagnosed with an anxiety disorder in my postpartum, but it doesn't mean that I wasn't, you know, crying my eyes out every night and I wasn't struggling. Mm-hmm. So that's like super important that the numbers are just based off of a diagnosis and not like these are the people who have problems. Well, no, like mm-hmm. it's got to be a higher number because literally everyone I talk to has had some kind of anxiety or like you were saying, intrusive thoughts happen in postpartum. So
yeah, absolutely. Research has shown actually, I think the most recent one and the most consistent one is that 99% of people in general, again, I will say especially moms, 99% of the population experience intrusive thoughts. Again, I think that's BS. I think 100% of people experience intrusive thoughts. I think that 1% maybe just didn't understand the question, or maybe they're afraid of saying that. But intrusive thoughts, I mean, we have like something ridiculous, like 60,000 thoughts a day or something like that, maybe more. There's no way that all of those can make sense and be in line with our values and, you know, be calm and neutral. Like at least a couple of those thoughts, especially when our hormones are going nuts after we just gave birth or when we're pregnant, like, and we have all of this mental load and we have all these environmental stressors, there's no way that you're not going to have some intrusive thoughts. In fact, fear is part of the human experience. Like if we didn't have fear, especially as moms, we wouldn't survive and the babies wouldn't survive. So there's definitely right. an evolutionary piece to this. Fear's not going anywhere. Like, fear is going to be along for the ride. And if we don't want to get rid of fear completely, because that indicates to us that there may be something there that we need to be vigilant for.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you, when you were struggling with anxiety and intrusive thoughts, what did that look like for you?
So it's, for me, what I remember feeling is just this dark cloud, like this doom feeling. Like I normally love this stuff. Like, I love Halloween. I love haunted houses. What it felt like to me was that feeling like when you're walking around a haunted house and you like know that something is going to jump out at you and you know that something bad is going to happen, but you just don't know when or how. And yeah. you're kind of just really tight and you're on the lookout for things. Like, that was me for probably the first year and a half of my son's life.
Wow.
I was making dinner one night and my husband came in and I was like cutting an onion with a really sharp knife, and something happened. My dog barked, or, you know, he closed a door too loud or something. And I was shaking so hard. I couldn't even touch the knife, or like, I couldn't cut the onion. And I was like, this is like, I just can't. Like, and then of course the whole shame cycle, right? Like, I should know better. What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
But yeah, eventually I got into a really awesome therapist, which I can talk about later. And I got on medications, which there are plenty that you can take when you're breastfeeding. There are plenty that you can take when you are pregnant. So we can get into that later. But yeah, ended up saving my life and being the best decision for my family and for me, for sure.
Yeah, the way I describe anxiety, because my husband doesn't understand what anxiety feels like. The way I tried to explain it to him was, like, when I have really bad anxiety and you're just kind of like, you're crying because exactly what you said, you feel almost like the world is ending, but nobody mm-hmm. else knows it but you. Mm-hmm. I always explain like the physical feeling of when you think you're about to rear end another car and you get that like jolt throughout your body. But in the car, like, once you realize there's no danger and you're not going to hit the car, it just instantly goes away. But when you have like an anxious episode, it just doesn't go away. And you're just like living in that like heightened like sense of like something bad is about to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I can relate too. My husband is one of the most unflappable people ever. And so it was really difficult. Like, I would almost get envious of him sometimes. Not that I would want anyone, especially him, to experience this, but it's one more thing that makes us feel awful about the experience, right?
Like,
it's just such a dark, dark feeling. But everything that you're saying, right? Like, you're talking a lot about fear and anxiety. And like I said, fear has a place in motherhood. Unfortunately, like, from an evolutionary standpoint, if we weren't anxious about our child being okay, if we weren't anxious about them breathing in the middle of the night, like, from an evolutionary standpoint, the baby probably, like, babies probably wouldn't survive at the rate that they do. And so where it goes wrong, though, is where we aren't able to, where we just kind of go crazy with those behaviors and we do them so repetitively. We don't just check on our baby one time at night. We are like zooming in on the camera and we're checking on them multiple times. I remember there was one time where I went to go and pick up my infant, and something happened, like his neck like went backwards or something. And we came very close, maybe an inch or two from hitting like a corner in our dresser, and he did not hit it. Like, he did not cry. He was sleeping. I checked his head and it still wasn't enough. Like, I literally was thinking, like, did I miss him crying? Like, did I black out because I'm so tired? Did I black out that whole episode of him crying? Like, am I so tired that I can't see the cut on his head? And I remember I had to wake my husband up from like a dead sleep and have him check my baby, because I needed to be 100% sure that I didn't hurt him on accident and that he didn't have a concussion or that he wasn't bleeding. Like, that's when evolutionarily, like, that doesn't make sense anymore. That's OCD. Yeah. That's anxiety wreaking complete havoc.
So what are some other, I know you mentioned like there's very common kind of intrusive thoughts or like fears that new moms especially have when the infant is still, you know, like really dependent upon them and tiny and has mm-hmm. the soft spot on their head. So what are some common things that new moms struggle with regard to like intrusive thoughts?
Yeah. So right when we become pregnant or, and especially once we have the baby, we experience as moms, something called a rapid increase in responsibility. And so if there are two things that OCD and anxiety hate, it's one, responsibility. So being accountable to somebody else, having someone else rely on you, it's just so much more accountability. And two is uncertainty. So responsibility and uncertainty are just festering breeding grounds for OCD and anxiety to latch on. And what is motherhood except for like responsibility and uncertainty, right? Like it is the perfect melting pot for every mom to feel these cognitive, like racing thoughts, these behavioral urges to want to like avoid staircases and, you know, emotionally it just feels very anxiety provoking. So some common things that I hear moms struggle with is harm intrusive thoughts. So what these are, first of all, intrusive thoughts are just any thought that comes in kind of out of nowhere that is experienced as very disturbing and disruptive. And you're kind of like, whoa, where the heck did that come from? And like I said, we all experience intrusive thoughts, not just about babies, but about, it could be about anything. It could be about, you know, especially with the pandemic, there's a lot of more contamination intrusive thoughts going on. We can all have intrusive thoughts, right? So where it goes wrong is we can have intrusive thoughts and we can kind of experience them and be like, well, that's weird. And we can kind of shrug them off and keep moving about our day. Or when we're, especially when we're moms and we have all this responsibility and we have a lot of uncertainty, we're going to experience that intrusive thought the same way that anybody else would, but we're going to do, instead of shrugging it off, we're going to do things like we're going to take responsibility for the thought. We're going to like, okay, so responsibility for the thought means like, what does that mean about me? Like, I must be such a bad mom that I had that thought. Other moms don't have that thought. What is that about me that made me have that thought? Yeah. You'll judge the thought. So instead of just acknowledging it as a strange human experience, because our brains are super complicated, you judge the thought as being negative and I have to get rid of it and I don't want to have that thought ever again. So some common themes here are going to be harm intrusive thoughts, whether it's accidental or purposeful. So staircases are really hard and like heights of any kind are really usually very hard for parents. Like feeling like, oh my gosh, what, I had an intrusive thought. Like, what if I dropped him down the stairs or I threw him off of the balcony? Then what they'll do is they'll avoid balconies or they'll avoid the stairs. I remember when Eli, my son, was really young, and this happens to dads too. So this is an example about how my husband experienced intrusive thoughts. We went out to eat for the first time since having our son, and he was maybe like 6 or 7 weeks old. And the waiter positioned us right under this big like ceiling decoration. And it was like this big wooden wheel from a wagon or something. And he actually asked that we got moved because he kept having intrusive thoughts of the wheel like falling down and hitting and hurting our son. So some other ones too are contamination. So especially with the pandemic going on right now, so lots of contamination based intrusive thoughts, like not wanting to get your baby sick, not wanting them to have any, like, you know, I'm all for people feeding their children, whatever it is that they want, but sometimes women can feel like, oh my gosh, they can't have anything with any chemicals and it has to be pure and it has to be this. And that's fine if that works for you. But if it doesn't work for you and you're still really anxious about it, then that might be something to get help for. Just perfectionism, I think in general, you know, like feeling like we need to have the house perfectly clean or they need to be perfect as far as like getting the perfect toys, and perfection can be just crazy for moms especially. And then there's one area of intrusive thoughts that will probably trigger people just to even mention. So trigger warning, but I want to make it known because it's very common. It's actually one of the most common things that I see is sexual intrusive thoughts. So
I was just reading about that somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And people don't talk about it. So as difficult as it is already to talk about this stuff, then you get someone who has sexual intrusive thoughts and it's like, whoa, like, no way. I'm not telling anybody about that. I remember anytime that I give a lecture on this topic or anytime that I talk to like a mom's group about this topic, I always say this again, because this is the one subtype that they're probably not reading online. They're probably not hearing about. And I would never want a mom to be struggling with this and be like, well, there's still something terribly wrong with me. Like I can't change my son's diaper without thinking that I'm going to do X, Y, and Z to him. But that happens. That happens. Sexual intrusive thoughts happen. It gets in the way of diaper changes and clothing changes and baths. It's a big issue. So those are the intrusive thoughts. And then obviously with the intrusive thoughts, you'll have some compulsions or behaviors. So a big one is having other people do things for you. So like, no, I can't give him a bath. Like I can't see his crotch. I can't see his private parts. Like dad has to do it. Avoiding things like staircases. Googling is awful. So like Googling and asking Google, like, what's the perfect way to do things? Like, what's the consequence of having this ingredient as an infant? Those are all things that, yeah, it can be really, really tricky to get out of that cycle.
This episode is brought to you by Little Spoon. I'm just going to be honest here. As a busy parent, it's important to keep your life simple and convenient, especially at mealtimes. Nobody ever told me how stressful mealtimes can be. Little Spoon is one way to help you do just that. Little Spoon delivers fresh, healthy meals and snacks straight to your door that your kiddo will love at every eating stage they are in. Their goal is simple. It's to keep your kid healthy, but also to make it the easiest part of your day so that you can cut through all the drama of mealtime without compromise. Little Spoon's baby blends are fresh, organic baby food from single ingredients to multi-textured purees to take the stress out of starting solids. Their biteables are transition to table early finger food meals that are cut to size to promote easy self-feeding with healthy, balanced foods that are free of artificial junk. Little Spoon's plates are for toddlers and big kids. They taste amazing, and even the pickiest eaters will love them. Think hidden veggie mac and cheese, chicken nuggets, and adventurous eats like pot stickers, gnocchi, and more. Little Spoon also offers smoothies, lunchers, and snacks. Did I mention it gets delivered right to your door? It is so flexible, so easy, and everything stores right in the fridge and freezer. You can check out the menu and change up what you order every single time. The price is right, the quality is unmatched, your kids will love it. It's a huge win-win for your family. So simplify your kiddo's mealtime with 30% off your first order. Go to littlespoon.com/momroom and enter our code MOMROOM at checkout to get 30% off your first Little Spoon order. Okay, so something I wanted to ask you about, because I just talked about this on Instagram the other day, and it was why moms wake up to the slightest stir at night, but we seem to feel like our partners who maybe didn't birth the child or dads just sleep through little sounds. Because I know for me, when Milo just stirs or makes a sound, it triggers this anxiety feeling in like throughout my entire body. And then it's like I'm at this heightened like state, and then I can't fall back asleep for so long. Even though I know that he is totally fine, he's safe in his crib, and he just, you know, woke up and is whining for 30 seconds or whatever it is, it's like now I can't fall asleep because it created that response in my body, like I was talking about, like you, like when I'm going to think I'm going to rear end a car. So why is that something that happens to so many moms?
So two things here that I think you're bringing up is, one, the evolutionary piece. Like, I'm sure there are exceptions out there, but I think across the board, for the most part, moms are the ones who are going to be those like sensitive sleepers when it comes to their babies. And dads are right there snoozing away. Like I swear I woke up at every little thing, like any sniffle, any stir. I was right there and I was like zoomed in. Nothing could get me to go back asleep. And my husband would sleep during an epic temper tantrum if he could have. I think a lot of that is just our hard wiring, right? Like society and like our our concepts of cultural expectations have changed in that, like, yes, dads are helping out more at night and they are taking over more of that responsibility, but our evolution takes a long time to catch up. And so our evolution as like being the primary caregivers and being the one who is ultimately tied mostly to the baby's survival, that's not going to go away anytime soon. So that's the first piece, I think, is why, unfortunately, we are bound by our evolution, whether we like it or not. And then two, I think what you're experiencing and what so many other moms experience, and me too, is what we call anxiety about anxiety. So
yes.
So that is a thing. And as if anxiety isn't awful already, you can be anxious about being anxious. We call it anxiety sensitivity. And so essentially what I think happens, and this is at least my experience, you can verify or not, but I'm never really anxious about my son crying. What I do get anxious about is all of the miscellaneous cognitive and emotional processes that go on with that. So like believing that I can't handle his tantrums, the impact of whatever parenting decision I make on him in that moment. I think about, should I be doing this? Like, should I be comforting him and just validating his emotions, or should I be doing this instead? I saw that on Instagram, and then you're just kind of anxious about, and then you're anxious because you don't know what you're doing. And do I really have this motherhood thing down? And like, you just work yourself up into such a tizzy because you're anxious about being anxious. So
yeah,
I think it's more of the like secondary kind of emotional and cognitive processes that happen for us as moms that we get anxious by, not necessarily the crying, because especially as they get older, right? Like we kind of know their deal, like they're going to wake up, and we kind of know maybe with practice and with more confidence, like what their cries mean and how to handle them. But we still, like I said, we have these emotional and cognitive experiences that go along with them crying of like, I don't know if I can handle this tantrum. Like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. Do I just sit there and listen to him, or am I spoiling him? Like, should I give into the tantrum or should I not? Like, it's just all these secondary kind of processes.
Like internal struggles. I know for me, a lot of it is that it's the unknown. Mm-hmm. Like, is he gonna just fuss in his crib for 30 seconds and then fall back asleep for the rest of the night? Or is he going to do this like every half hour from now on? Is he going to like not fall back asleep and I'm going to be up with him all night? It's like, it's like the unknown of, even though like 95% of the time he just falls back asleep so quickly. It's the unknown. Yeah. And yeah, that's so interesting. The thing I wanted to ask about was, because anxiety and OCD or intrusive thoughts are so common in postpartum, you know, I think more and more people are talking about these things on social media and in blog posts and whatnot. So if somebody is experiencing issues with anxiety or OCD, how would they determine whether or not it's something that is like normal versus I need to seek treatment? Like, what are the like, how do you know if you've crossed that line?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so what I would encourage moms or any listeners to judge based off of is try to do it less based on what you think is quote unquote normal. And like comparing that with what you're doing, because we are never going to know or have a legitimate estimate of what's normal. Like, I can't tell you what the normal amount is to be checking your baby at night. I can't tell you what the normal amount of, you know, whatever behavior is. We're never going to know that. What I would encourage moms and listeners to be asking themselves for is like, how badly is this affecting my life? So like, how much are these symptoms interfering with my life and my happiness and my well-being? So definitely looking more as far as interference. So, you know, emotionally, how is it interfering with you? Time-wise, like how much time is it taking from your day? Are there things that you want to be doing? Like, you want to be able to go to your mom's house, but you can't because she lives on a second floor condo and you're terrified of stairs. That would definitely be an interfering thing. Just generally how much it's disturbing you in your day-to-day, how much it's disturbing your family. Ask yourself if it's interfering at all with your ability to take care of yourself or to take care of your baby. Like, if you're constantly having, and I'm not saying don't divvy up the responsibilities at all. Like, I think if you have the privilege of a partner who's able to be present and all that, like, definitely splitting up the tasks there, I think is great. But I think it's different when you do that based in anxiety. So, like, again, with the sexual intrusive thought example that I gave you, like, no, I can't handle the looking at the crotch. I can't handle them naked. So, like, dad has to take over. That's more of an anxiety or and fear-based decision. And so my suggestion would be, like, when you start to realize that you're making a lot of decisions based in fear and just when it feels awful, like, there's no anxiety and OCD are so common, and the treatment for it is more effective for OCD and anxiety than any other treatment for any other disorder. So ERP, which again is the treatment for it, it's the most effective treatment. It is awesome. And there are lots of opportunities to get better. If you just want to feel better, like, the help is available and it works. It will be a total life changer, a total game changer for you. So rather than identifying, like, is this normal or is this not normal? Just ask yourself how you're feeling, like, how you really truly believe your family is functioning. And if you want to be functioning better, I mean, therapy is awesome. It's like I said, going to therapy as a therapist was the best decision that I ever made for my family.
Yeah. One of the things that I always talk about is how when I had so much experience with anxiety before having Milo. So I knew exactly what was happening when I started to get those, like, intense anxiety spells at night. And just, like, opening up to my husband and being like, yep, I'm having horrible anxiety right now. Like, I'm, you know, and I would be crying and just telling somebody felt so good. And then telling my parents, like, they would come over to visit and I would be like, yeah, like, every night I'm, like, crying, I'm having, like, really bad anxiety. And then at the first visit that we took Milo to our family physician, I told her right away. I remember her asking, like, okay, and how are you doing? And I just broke down crying. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. She had a medical student, of course, working with her that day. And I was like, of course she has to listen to this. I just broke down crying. And she was like, oh my God, don't worry. Like, this is so normal. And just kind of getting that validation and understanding that, you know, this, like, right now, this was very typical. And if it didn't go away in, you know, 1 or 2 weeks, that, like, she was like, then come back and see me. And then we'll talk about, like, further, like, treatment options, like, what we can do. But yeah, just telling somebody and, like, taking that first step into talking about it and admitting what's going on really, really can help. Mm-hmm. And kind of get things rolling. And then you feel better about, you know, seeking treatment or whatever it might be. So the next thing that we'll talk about is treatment. So what does that look like in a therapy setting? But then also you were saying that you had some practical tips for moms and they can start doing them if they wanted to try and help themselves at home.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, the best treatment for OCD and anxiety, and they're really similar. So whether you feel like it's just more general anxiety or whether you're having these intrusive thoughts with the very clear compulsions, the treatment is really pretty similar, if not identical in a lot of cases. So that's going to be exposure and response prevention, or ERP. And like I said, that's the best treatment for OCD and anxiety. It's more effective for OCD and anxiety than any other treatment for any other disorder. So what ERP involves is essentially working with a therapist to systematically and gradually get yourself in these challenging or anxiety-provoking situations that you would normally avoid or have to do, like, some ritual or safety behavior to get through. So for me, what an example would have been with my son with the car example is I would have to drive for an identified period of time and I would not be able to, physically get out of my car and check that he was in there. Two, I would have to make sure as much as I could not to check in the rearview mirror to make sure that he was there. And instead, I was just letting myself be anxious. So having that anxious experience, letting those feelings be there, and not having to do these rituals or these safety behaviors to kind of manage that anxiety or to get rid of it. Other examples would be like the stairway, right? So if you're really fearful of the staircase, trying to like approach that staircase with your baby as much as possible. There are tons of exposures that you could do for any type of like subtype or any type of anxiety that you're experiencing. And the treatment is the same regardless of if it's sexual intrusive thoughts that you're experiencing or if it's more just more general stuff like about the baby's well-being or about their breathing at night. Maybe you work with your therapist to come up with some type of agreement. Like I'm only going to check the baby one time tonight, only one time. And then you can obviously work with your therapist to try not to check at all. But the big picture here is that you're doing these exposures, which are these anxiety provoking situations, and you're doing the ritual prevention and trying not to do these safety behaviors that you normally otherwise would have to do to make yourself feel better. And the idea there is that you just kind of ride it out, right? Like RIDE is kind of maybe a more practical way for people who just day to day want to practice this stuff on their own. So knowing that your anxiety is going to go up and it's going to come down just like a wave. And what you need to do is just ride that wave. So whether it's giving your son a bath with intrusive thoughts, or if it's, you know, turning off the video monitor, sitting with that uncertainty, like maybe they're crying, maybe they're not, like maybe not. And I know that that's really hard for people, for moms to kind of sit with, but it's hard also to be doing these behaviors all the time and to feel like an anxious mess.
So is the idea that as you continue to do the exposure, your anxiety will lessen over time?
Yep, absolutely. So I think of it, I encourage the people that I work with to think of it kind of like you, when you jump into a pool. So when you jump into a pool, it's really, really cold at first, but as long as you stay in there, your body eventually gets used to it. It's not that the temperature of the water objectively changes. So it's not your external environment that's changing. It's your internal environment that's changing. And So it's all about putting yourself in these anxiety provoking situations and just letting your emotions and your anxiety kind of run its course. And they will run their course. If anyone out there has ever had panic or really, really intense anxiety, normally afterwards they feel exhausted.
Yep.
And what happens is, you know, your body will eventually calm down with the parasympathetic nervous system. You know, what that means is, so you're anxious, right? Like think about you whenever you're anxious about Milo, your sympathetic nervous system is going nuts, like fight or flight. It's going crazy. Your adrenaline is racing. Your eyes are widened. Your heart rate is going crazy. Your body is already trying to calm down. Like you might not be able to feel that yet, but that's that parasympathetic nervous system. That's your rest and digest. Now, what happens is we normally, being anxious and parents, right? Like we don't really have the patience to kind of like sit and let that naturally happen. What we do is we jump on Google, or we check the video monitor, or we ask our husbands to take care of something. Mm. What I work with people to do, and what ERP will help moms do, will be to have them do this anxiety provoking situation, feel their anxiety, and let that be there. It might take a couple minutes, maybe like 5, 6, 7, or 10 minutes, but eventually, just like being in a pool, it comes down all on its own. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really a cool process.
Hmm. And so I just in case people don't realize, like OCD stands for obsessive compulsive disorder. And I just wonder if you could speak a little bit about like what those entail. Like there's the obsession and then there's the compulsion, and like to give an example of what the obsession would be and then the compulsion, and kind of how the compulsion is to lessen the anxiety that you're feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yep. Like you said, all accurate so far. So with OCD, there's going to be very clearly some obsessions, which are going to be very repetitive. They're disturbing. They can be ideas, thoughts, images, or impulses. So you might have images of, you know, accidentally or even purposefully throwing your baby down the stairs. You might actually have urges to do that. Like that really scares people because it feels, again, like what is wrong with me?
Yeah.
What, it's my responsibility that I had that. So obsessions can come in the form of ideas, thoughts, urges, or impulses. compulsions, then usually what happens is we feel so anxious by those obsessions that we want to do this compulsion, which is just usually a behavior, but it can also be a mental kind of act. There are things called mental compulsions as well. So what that would be is avoiding the staircase, you know, having other people do things for you, maybe washing your hands excessively or cleaning excessively. So the obsession in the staircase example would be, oh my gosh, I'm going to throw them down the stairs. The compulsion would be avoiding the stairs.
Yeah.
The obsession about another, so the obsession about the example of my son in the car, the obsession would be like, what if you left him somewhere? The compulsion would be checking the rearview mirror to make sure that he was there, hearing, like checking in with my hearing to make sure that I could still hear him. And then two, physically, obviously, pulling the car over and physically checking to make sure that I could still feel him. So those are just some examples. But like I said, it could be more general too. So maybe just like a little bit of anxiety sprinkled across a whole range of issues. So you could be worrying a lot about the baby's health, whether they're breathing, worrying a lot about finances too is really, really common. Going back to work, like, that's really difficult for moms too, worrying about what's going to happen with a caregiver or what's going to happen at daycare. So these are all things that you can work on with a therapist to work on via exposure work. And it's going to be anxiety provoking at first, but it is super effective. And it's really empowering to learn that your anxiety doesn't dictate everything.
Right. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the helpful and practical things that people can do at home right now. You had a little
bit. Yeah, absolutely.
There. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of things that trip moms up, well, first and foremost, I think the most important thing is for moms to get educated and to hear podcasts like this and to follow healthy, you know, relatable content on social media. I'm careful to say that because I think you can also follow people on social media who are not good for your OCD and anxiety, who perpetuate this idea that like every picture has to be perfect and your house has to be perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, no screen time and whatever. But there are good accounts out there and good people to follow like you. You make content that's relatable. You share things that moms usually aren't able or willing to say. So you kind of like crack open the can for other moms to be able to come out and you know, acknowledge their experience. So as far as practically just becoming more educated, like knowing that these are normal experiences, quote unquote. Of course, your anxiety can kind of take it and make a crisis out of it, like I've said. But again, as far as intrusive thoughts go, and as far as some increase in anxiety goes, I think that's the normal when it comes especially to motherhood. So knowing that these experiences can be normal and are widely experienced, it's not personal to you. Like, you're not doing anything wrong. You're not crazy. I think sometimes people get the idea from like the media and the awful portrayal of postpartum issues. Like, those are the postpartum psychosis cases that you hear about in the news or on the media. And it's not like that all the time. So other than education, I think too, what moms can do is to check these, what we call cognitive distortions. So cognitive distortions are these like mental mind games or mind tricks that your mind plays on you. Some examples of these would be like all or nothing thinking, like I'm either a really, really great mom or I'm awful, like not understanding or acknowledging that probably we're somewhere in the middle, right? Like, we're probably doing okay, maybe some room for progress, but we're not awful either. We might do a lot of catastrophizing. So again, like, oh my gosh, I can't really see if my child is breathing on the camera. Okay, obviously they have died, right? Like, I can't see them breathing on the camera. Just making mountains out of molehills, essentially. Yeah. So that's what catastrophizing is. And then I think the other big one is probability overestimation. So with OCD and anxiety, there's always uncertainty. There's always some uncertainty that something bad could happen, like a baby dying from SIDS or us, yeah, accidentally losing our minds and throwing the baby down the stairs. Like, everything is uncertain. We can't say 100% certainty with anything. But what we do, especially as moms, and especially when anxiety and OCD are in the mix, we tend to overestimate the probability that something bad is going to happen or has happened. And so, one, I think becoming educated about those distortions, and two, knowing and like logically being able to kind of check those, like, whoa, am I really being as logical as I could about the situation? This is what my mind is probably doing right now. Like, what's a more neutral or more realistic way to evaluate this situation? Mm-hmm. Along the lines of ERP too, like, I think you definitely can, and I would advocate for it, to find a therapist who's trained in ERP and working, especially maybe even with moms. That would be the ideal situation. But if you're not in the position where you're able or willing to get treatment yet, you can still kind of live the lifestyle. So do the things that scare you, like do these anxiety provoking things and try not to do these safety behaviors that you would normally do otherwise. So walk by the stairs, give your kid the bath. As hard as it might be, it's also hard, and it's going to continue to gain speed if you continue to give in to the anxiety and the OCD in that way. Mm-hmm. So trying to do these anxiety provoking things as you can, trying to reduce and get rid of these, you know, safety behaviors as you can. And then the last thing I think would be to find a supportive community. There is something special about the motherhood research that suggests that above and beyond any other kind of group therapeutically, support from other moms is crucial, and it has to be the right support. So you have to find a tribe who you feel comfortable with. You have to find a tribe who you feel like you can be your authentic self around, who you can share these intimate experiences with and be vulnerable with. And they can be like, yeah, girl, me too. So I would totally 100% advocate for finding that group or finding a person who you can resonate with and connect with. I know it's really hard right now because of the pandemic, but I know a lot of therapists who are really trying to do like online Zoom groups with people, even if it's like a Facebook community or some people on Instagram, the right accounts, I think will bring a lot of solidarity to women. And there's just something about that supportive community that lowers that shame, that lowers that feeling of guilt, and normalizes these experiences a little bit more for moms, which can mean a world of difference in their postpartum experience.
Yeah, 100. I totally agree. That's always what I say. Like, I had two really good friends who both had babies right around the time that I had Milo. And we were like, we had a group text chat going all the time. And like, if I was crying at 10 p.m. because, you know, my husband wasn't home and Milo was throwing tantrums, it's like I was talking to them. And it was so helpful. And there was never, like you said, it has to be the right kind of support. Like, just because someone has a baby doesn't mean that they're going to be able to offer you the kind of support that you need. It has to be someone who is, you know, understanding and not judgmental and, you know, willing to help or at least just hear you out and agree like, yeah, like this really sucks sometimes. And mm-hmm. there's not going to be some magical answer for everything. You know, it's kind of like when you are going through a really difficult time and people are like, oh yeah, but have you tried this? Like, we did this and it worked fine. And it's like, that's not what mm-hmm. I need to hear right now. That's not helping. Yeah.
I know. It's like when you go to someone hoping that they can just like resonate with you a little bit, and then they end up giving you advice, and it's like, now I just feel a million times worse.
Yes. It's like, don't, like, that's not what I want. Just tell me like, yes, this sucks. Like, sometimes it sucks and it's so hard, but like, tomorrow's another day. And like, you know, if you need to cry, just cry. Do you want me to come over? Like, I was having a horrible day like a few Saturdays ago, and I was like crying, and my husband was at the hospital all day. He wasn't home. And my friend was like, do you want me to come over right now and bring you a latte? Like, I will come over. And I was like, no, I just want to be by myself. And she was like, no, like, seriously, like, I will come over. And it's like, that's exactly what I want. I don't want you to try and fix my problem. I just want you to be like, yeah, you're having a really bad day. Like, do you want a latte?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, as a therapist, I am a natural problem solver. And I'm always that person, like, how can I help you? Like, what, let's figure this out. Let's talk through this and we can figure it out. And then I became a mom. And now I hate advice. Like, yeah. I don't want your advice. I just want you to like let me say how awful this feels and just let me have that space and hold that space for me. So I think that's what moms need. And I know that there are some moms out there listening, and like, you experience them all the time, I'm sure, like on your comments, like, well, it's not that hard for me. That's okay. Like, yeah. That's okay. Like, that's your experience. And mine is still hard. Like,
exactly.
It's, yeah, like, we all struggle with different time periods, right? Like, I I did not like the newborn stage at all, but I really like the toddler stage. Other women are completely flip-flopped and different. And like, you can have your experience where you think everything is easy and motherhood is great. Mine still wasn't.
Yeah.
Like, we can have those experiences and have them coexist at the same time. And I talk about this a lot on my kind of platform. Like, this is something that I learned way too late in the game in motherhood, which is that you can experience two emotions at the same time. Like, you can be grateful and devastated. You can be really happy that you have this wonderful baby because you know so many women who struggle with infertility and you're so grateful for them. And you can also be mourning the life that you had before.
Yeah.
Like, you can experience two things at the same time, and that's okay. The same way that we can have two different experiences at the same time and have that be okay. We just have to, we're in it together. And as much as we want that support, we have to make sure we're giving that support to other moms too.
Yeah, totally. So lastly, or somewhat lastly, I thought you could share with us your resources for moms that you would recommend.
Yeah, so there are three books that absolutely changed my life. And unfortunately, I got to them, I think, just a little bit too late. So the first book is How to Not Hate Your Husband After Kids. I believe the author is Jancy Dunn, and it totally changed my life. And the title is kind of misleading because I think it's more about like the evolutionary differences between like why moms are the way that they are and why paternal figures are the way that they are. Like all the things that we've kind of talked about, at least touched on in this episode, which is like, yeah, why do moms wake up all the time and dads don't? And it just gives you a little bit better of an understanding. It's not that the dad usually doesn't care. It's that there are, our bodies haven't caught up with, you know, our evolution hasn't caught up yet with all these cultural differences. So How to Not Hate Your Husband After Kids is a really good one. Good Moms Have Scary Thoughts by Karen Kleinman is also awesome. Even if you just like Google Good Moms Have Scary Thoughts, you'll see a bunch of like the little drawings and illustrations. And it's all about intrusive thoughts and what exactly are the kind of day-to-day manifestations of that. And again, it's just really nice as a mom to see that that exists somewhere else other than in your own brain. Again, that reduces the shame and reduces the guilt that you experience as a result of that. And then another one by her, I believe, is Dropping the Baby and Other Scary Thoughts. So again, all things more in depth that we've talked about here. But the experience of these intrusive thoughts, especially as it relates to motherhood and early parenting, that can be really, really scary, but the book will definitely give you some really good context for these thoughts. If you're struggling and wanting to find a therapist, then I would absolutely recommend the International OCD Foundation, so iocdf.org. You can search for therapists in your area, and you want to be sure that you have a therapist trained in OCD and anxiety. The worst thing that someone can do is to just go and get talk therapy. That kind of talk therapy, when I say talk therapy, I refer to more like just supportive therapy and I'm here for you and all of that. Yes, we want that from our friends, but we don't want that from our therapist because anxiety is so behaviorally based. You really need a behavioral kind of treatment. And if you're just getting the talk therapy and the supportive therapy, the back and forth, you might be temporarily feeling better. But as long as there's not that behavioral change, like giving the baby the bath, not avoiding the staircase, like if you just talk about everything and you don't behaviorally challenge those things at home, nothing will end up changing in the long term.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you have a really good OCD and anxiety therapist. For mom support in particular, Postpartum Support International, postpartum.net is really good. So that's the PSI. Again, they'll help you find therapists in your area who are trained in postpartum issues. I think the right social media content on Instagram can be really critical. Finding moms you can relate with, and again, finding that tribe. And then the last, it's not really a resource, but a kind of a tip would be to advocate for yourself. I'm so glad that you had a really like good transition talking to your doctor about everything.
Mm-hmm.
My experience was terrible. Like I had to, when I broke down to my doctor and I said that I was struggling for the first time, the response I got from my doctor was that I should just give my son his binky. And so I had to be like, no, I'm literally crying in the shower 3 days a week. Like I cannot continue to do this.
Who, and like, was your doctor, I'm just curious, was your doctor a male or a female?
It was a female OBGYN, which was wild to me.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, and I'm a therapist, right? Like, and she knew that. So I was just floored again, like, if this is my struggle, if this is how much I'm having to advocate for myself, like, I can't let other women do this.
See, and the issue with that is, like, now imagine you didn't know everything that you know, and you weren't, right, you know, like a specialist in OCD and anxiety, and you just, you know, it took you like 2 weeks to finally open up to your physician about struggles that you were having, and that's their response. Like, as someone who is not well versed in this area, how shitty now do you feel? And of course, it's going to just like perpetuate your feelings about not wanting to open up to people about it. Because like that is like rage inducing.
Mm-hmm. And then even further, this is like even going to be more rage inducing. So imagine coming out to a doctor or anybody who's not well versed in OCD and anxiety and saying that you're having thoughts about, you know, wanting to do something sexually to your baby, or that you have intrusive thoughts about your baby and you think about stabbing them with a knife. Like, the maternal health system fails us every day. And so my goal is to like help moms feel empowered to be like, no, this is OCD because it's ego dystonic, which essentially just means like it's inconsistent with your values. Right. So yeah, because I remember when I shared some of my intrusive thoughts, you know, just to cover their own butts, of course, as physicians, they have to say like, well, have you ever wanted to harm your child? And I said, no, but so many other women, like that's what they're struggling with. They're having intrusive thoughts that they're going to harm their baby. So if they were to say yes, imagine the alarms that are going to pop off with that, right? Like we need to be more armed as moms and as providers, hopefully, that just because moms say that they're struggling with this, it doesn't mean that they want to. That means like this could harm. Intrusive thoughts with OCD are very, very real. And we need moms to be able to come forward and talk about it.
And so I'm just curious, like I know you're in the US and I'm in Canada, so maybe it's different, but like what is the protocol for a physician who has, you know, a patient come in and say something like that? Because clearly they're not specialists in this area and they're not psychologists to be able to kind of screen for certain things. So what do they do? Because, you know, the odd chance that someone does come into their office and say something like they're having harmful thoughts and then something bad ends up happening. It's like, where do you, like, they're not prepared to deal with that. So what is their protocol for that?
So they will ask, like I said, as more of a reason to just to cover their own butts and to have it on a document. So they will ask. And so if a mom out there is listening and they, you know, do want to talk to their doctor more about it, ideally they'll have a doctor who is well-versed, like a psychiatrist who is more well-versed in mental health and OCD and anxiety. But even then, I can't promise that they would know about harm intrusive thoughts and OCD and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so what they'll do is they probably ask about, you know, the thoughts and have you ever thought about this? And then they'd probably get into legitimate history, like, well, have you ever, you know, hurt them or harmed them? And then probably what they would do is they would schedule a consult. I have heard of several women who have been struggling significantly with harm intrusive thoughts, and they are sure that they have harm intrusive thoughts. Like they know that they have OCD. They are disturbed about OCD. So the thing about OCD, especially the harm intrusive thoughts and even the sexual intrusive thoughts too, like these are the people who are the least likely to commit these crimes. Like these are the people who remove all the knives from their house because they're so terrified that they're going to lose their minds and go crazy. Mm-hmm. These are the people who are the least likely to do anything sexual with their children because they're so terrified of even changing their diaper. They avoid it and they wait until dad gets home. Mm. Like, that's what we mean by ego dystonic, right? So like you have the thought, but it's ego dystonic. It's inconsistent with your values. You don't like it. The people who end up acting on these thoughts, you know, people who legitimately do hurt their kids or do legitimately like sexually molest their children, they have those thoughts and they like them.
Right.
So the people with OCD and anxiety and true harm intrusive thoughts or true sexual intrusive thoughts, they're the least likely, right? Like they are avoidant of anything even remotely related to do with those acts. So it's important for moms to know that that is their, if that is their experience, to be able to share that and be like, no, actually, I was listening to this lady, this OCD and anxiety specialist about OCD and anxiety, and these are harm intrusive thoughts in OCD and anxiety, and I'm experiencing ego dystonic thoughts right now. But yeah, your best bet is to go to a therapist, like absolutely go to a therapist who's well-versed in this stuff. Unfortunately, at least here and in my experience, the doctors, like the primary care physicians, it's just not a good first line of action, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I know for me, and I'm sure it's the exact same thing for, you know, if someone was dealing with anxiety, like in postpartum, I remember like I had such bad anxiety that I was going to drop out of school, and I was like, I don't want to drop out of school, but I can't do it like this. And I went to my family physician, and like to get in to see a therapist was at least a 3-month wait. And I was like, I can't wait 3 months because like I'm going to drop out of school. So that's why I went on the medication. And like it just frustrates me so much. And it's like, unless you're in this like crisis where you have to go to the emergency room and like be admitted, it's so hard, at least in Canada, to get help. Like, you know, like it's like you need to be really struggling before you can actually see somebody, which is so frustrating. Absolutely. And like you said, like if OBGYNs or family physicians are the ones that are seeing women in postpartum, then they should be well versed in all of this stuff and be screening for it and ask about it. And, you know, and it's just not there yet, which is so frustrating.
Mm-hmm. And I hope some physicians and some OB-GYNs are listening and they're like, no, that's, I don't like, I hope that that's not globally the case. Like, but in my experience,
and I hate that because I always speak about the healthcare system and like, I always make it a point to say, like, I was very lucky. Like my family doctor was like a female. She was about my age. She had 2 young kids herself and she totally understood like all the struggles that I was having. And it was very easy for me to talk to her and open up to her. But I know not everyone has that same experience. And it's just like, you just wish that healthcare and like the protocols for dealing with women in postpartum were like the same across the board and everyone had the same positive experience. But unfortunately, that's not the way it goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, even at best, right? Like, unless you advocate for more, you go from everyone saying like, oh my gosh, like, how are you feeling? Like they are checking on you constantly, especially in the hospital. And then you go, boom, 6 weeks without anything.
Yeah.
The checkup at 6 weeks is very brief. They give you, if anything, at best, a postpartum depression screen, which is a huge, huge problem. But with all the research that I've done, anxiety is way more common. We should be testing for both. And there are so many errors that can take place, especially in the motherhood realm and shame. Like, people aren't honest on a lot of those assessments. They're embarrassed and they're shameful. I had to beg my provider to give me a postpartum anxiety screen. I literally said, you're going to ask me, she was taking me through the postpartum depression screen. And I said, you're going to score me on this and I'm not going to hit. If you give me the anxiety screen of the same exact questionnaire, which I know exists, I will score clinically.
Yeah.
And so she did. But it's like, why do I have to advocate for that? Like moms who do not have my background would never know to do that. And the fact that I had to, like, I guess my general moral of the story here is like, you may have to advocate for yourself, unfortunately. And that doesn't say anything about you. That is nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with the system.
Yeah.
And it's still so worth it to make the steps and try to get better.
Yeah, totally agree. Okay. So lastly, where can people find you, your social media, your podcast, your website?
Yeah. So if any of you enjoyed anything that we talked about here, I talk about so much more anxiety and OCD related content and just mental health in general. Definitely a lot of postpartum support over at my Instagram, which is at jenna.overbaugh. And then I do also have a website with lots of good resources on there. Also a good email newsletter with weekly challenges and all other good stuff on there. So that's at jennaoverbaugh.com. You can also find me on my podcast, which is available on all podcast platforms. It's called All the Hard Things, and I have so much fun with it. And I had so much fun with you today. So
yes.
Definitely, yeah, check me out. Come in, get some more info. Like I said, there's already tons of OCD and anxiety related content and a lot for moms too. I also, on my podcast, I have what's called an Anonymom series where I actually interview anonymously moms at various stages of postpartum. And they share kind of their deepest and darkest moments with me. They're really intimate conversations about postpartum anxiety and postpartum trauma. Lots of good stuff that people generally don't talk about. So if you are in the mode of just like needing that solidarity, definitely check out that podcast. Again, it's All the Hard Things, and you'll just have to look for the Anonymom series episodes. So many awesome women, so many awesome stories.
I love that idea. That's so awesome. Mm-hmm. I just want to make it clear that all your resources that you talked about, like the books and also all your platforms and your podcasts, like I'm going to have links to absolutely everything in the episode notes. So if you guys are curious, go and check out the notes. So yeah, other than that, thank you so much for talking to us. This was such a good conversation, and I've been waiting to do an episode on anxiety. And when you asked me, I was like, oh my God, yes. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And yeah, we can all do it. We're all in it together. There's light at the end of the tunnel for sure.